Right, the recording has started.
Okay, and the meeting's been opened up. Sandy, everyone's in that's looking to be in now?
Yep, the lobby has been admitted.
Great. All right, good morning. Scott Beethan, I'm the... if you're not... if you could make sure we're muted if you're not speaking. Good morning. Scott Beethan, Chair of the Appraiser Commission, and it's now 10:01 on Thursday, October 16th, 2025. So I'm calling the meeting to order. And as always, a reminder that the meeting is open to the public. We'll take time at the end of the meeting for a brief comment period. Participants will have no more than 3 minutes to address the commission. And as a reminder, commissioners are not to we're not to engage in discussion during the public comments. If there's matters that we want to then take up, we'll address that when we go to setting the future agenda. As a courtesy, reminder for all folks to keep their mics on mute unless they're speaking. And that way we don't get background noise. And if we could use the raised hand function for providing comments, and I know sometimes we just talk into it, and I'm probably the worst culprit, but to the best that we can do that, that works for us. So, okay, I think that we'll go to a roll call. And so Program Specialist Sandy Bauer, if you could do that, that'd be great.
Of course. I'll start with you, Chair Beethan.
Present.
Vice Chair Stevens. Here. Commissioner Moore.
Present.
Commissioner Potter.
Present.
Commissioner Sporn. I see you're muted. Commissioner Sporn.
I'm here. Thanks.
And Commissioner Sedor has an excused absence. Back to you, Chair. We do have a quorum.
Great. Thanks very much. So I think the first order of business, if we would entertain a motion to approve today's agenda as presented.
So moved.
Thanks, Commissioner Potter. Second.
Second, Vice Born.
Thank you. Are there any discussion? Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Nay, nay, no nays, and then no abstentions. All right, so the agenda is approved as presented. We have two sets of meeting minutes to approve today, and if we could start with the meeting minutes from April 17th. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you.
Seconded by Mr. Sporn.
Thank you. So moved by Commissioner Potter and seconded by Mr. Sporn. Any discussion? Seeing none, will all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. And we need to do the same for the July 24th, 2025 meeting minutes. If we could look for a motion to approve.
Moved. So moved. Potter.
Seconded by Mr. Sporn.
Perfect. Really appreciate this. Any additions, comments, revisions? Seeing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nay? Okay, motion carries. All right. So we have no awards or recognitions. And, all right. You know, I apologize. I'm moving through the agenda so quickly. I just cursed it all the way down and I lost my place. So I'm kind of getting, I'm glad you got it up on the screen, Sandy. You know, we should think about going to a consent agenda. You know, just thinking all these motions, right? So, but I do really appreciate everybody helping us to get this moving along, and that's why I should stop talking and turn it over to a program update.
Right. So our program update, Mr. Bill Dutra is going to address the commission with some updates for the appraiser program. Mr. Dutra.
Good morning and thank you. I appreciate this time this morning. So one of the items that is garnering a lot of interest and a lot of energy and anxiety right now coming to the department is I was asked to come back and talk about the department's use or non-use of the expert review appraiser panel. This is some information that is in statute, and I believe Sandy is can get this information out to you. So one of the questions that came to me from Chair Beathen and Chair Stephens was, is the department aware of the expert review appraiser panel that is available to the director in statute? And the short answer is yes, we are available to that. We are aware of that, and the director is well aware of all resources available to him. A little history. Back when this program started, back in the early 90s, when it was brand new, the department, in the statute, it allows the department to provide or seat something that's called the Expert Review Appraiser Panel. This group could assist the department if we had questions or conduct standard three reviews of information or appraisal assignments for us as we relate to investigations. We use this panel quite a lot. In fact, myself, I used it quite a lot back in the early 90s, 93 through 95, 96, 97, right in that time frame. It was very active. At some point, we determined as a department that it was no longer in our best interest to have that expert review appraiser panel for any number of reasons as we move forward. So it was basically abolished, and we no longer brought that information back to us. A couple of the reasons behind that. The appraisal subcommittee, along with the appraisal foundation and Arrow, met with state regulators and developed a series of trainings and courses for administrative reviews and administrative investigations. And that's what we conduct. Those were the standards that we were required to meet from the appraisal subcommittee, were those standards and those education requirements. Our team has gone through those, the team that we currently have, we've gone through those. We do continue to take ongoing education as well from that moment forward. One thing I would mention and caution is that expert review appraiser panel, as you all noticed, is anybody can be on that panel. I can be licensed today, and I can apply, and I would be appointed to that panel. There are no guidelines, there's no rules or requirements to be on that panel or how they're going to be used or when someone would be used. The other thing that is important to remember, as I explained to Commissioners Beathen and Stevens, is if the Department of Licensing is going to go forth with a action, and when I mean an action, we're going to go to a hearing with a licensee, it is up to the, it is up to the Office of the Attorney General to go through a process to vet an individual to be qualified as an expert. A statute does not in itself create someone to be an expert in their field to testify on our behalf. There is a process that goes through for the courts. And many of you that are on this call today, and I know Commissioner Beathen, he and I had a long conversation. He has testified as an expert in the civil arena, and there is a process for him to be vetted to be considered an expert by the court. That's where we come into those situations. I myself, in the past, when we have gone through that process with the AG, as we have a very specific or unique situation, I have reached out to different commissioners looking for references. Without actually discussing those cases of who has testified in certain areas. We relay that information to our prosecutors. They then have that authority to go through that process to vet somebody on there. That is a brief history of this. I wanted to make this quick and sort of to the point to see if there was any questions from the commissioners.
First of all, I'd like to maybe, I want to thank you, Bill, for everything you're doing, because the long and short of this is this topic came up, and the question is, you know, do we ask, you know, Bill to come in and speak on this? And I know there's some energy around this topic, but what I appreciate is, it's interesting, just yesterday, if I could just take a quick moment, yesterday there was an Appraisal Institute conference, and it's an annual conference, and there was a panel, and it was, how can you be engaged as an appraiser? And one of the ways is to be engaged with the DOL and understanding, you know, what they can and can't do and what they believe that they've at least thought through and done their best to address. And so So, Bill, I really appreciate you being here and being willing to field these questions, because I think this is a healthy dialogue. And I also really appreciate, because the more I hear, and you and I did have a long conversation, the more that I get to hear on kind of your thinking about this. I mean, we're not a rubber stamp commission. However, I think it's really incumbent on us to really kind of understand what you can do, what you can't do, why you do the things that you do. And I got really comfortable with understanding kind of where the department's coming in on this. And I just want to thank you for being here. So that's just kind of me just doing a little bit. And, best part about it is we have elections later, and that means I probably won't always be speaking into it like this, but I want to say thank you.
You know, not a problem. Were there any other questions? I know Commissioner Potter, he and I went a couple of weeks, maybe more than a month on this thing, discussion, debate, probably in that between 16 and 18. The same topic came up again at that time that we discussed and worked with and talked with industry about it. So, Commissioner Potter, did I miss anything from what you remember from those discussions back then?
No, not that I recall, Bill. I like the idea of the expert review panel. I understand the associated problems and conflicts involved. I think when the expert review panel was being used, it was when the program had initially got stood up by the DOL, and maybe the assistance of some expert opinions along the way helped with cases being more effectively adjudicated to a fair conclusion. I think now, you know, you have a lot more talent and experience on the enforcement side. And I understand the other issues involved with vetting or qualifying an expert for testimony. And there was also a period of time when people were kind of reluctant to be on the expert review panel because people were turning them in from their review, being saying somebody else was wrong, and they were saying, no, that guy was right and the expert reviewer was wrong. So it I don't think you missed anything, Bill.
So I appreciate that, Commissioner Potter. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the commission?
I just wanted to thank Bill for bringing us new people that weren't here previously and dealt with it. I just wanted to say thank you for bringing us up to date on the history of it and where it got us today and understanding the department side of it. It was really helpful to be able to communicate about the issues in that when you understand the history of it. So thank you, Bill, for your time you spent with us explaining that.
Not a problem. And again, to any of the commissioners, if you need more and want to take that individual conversation offline, feel free to reach out to Sandy and I. Jump into that conversation with you. It's not a problem. But I appreciate the time that you all give me to bring this update to you today. And I thank you very much and have a great day.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. You know, I was thinking several years ago, I was pretty heavily involved with the Appraisal Foundation and on one of the councils, the Industry Advisory Council. And I remember when the enforcement training was kind of first thought up by TAF, and they put a lot of money and time into sending, you know, every state had the opportunity to come in and get a lot of training. And I think they had them, they flew people in, or they went out to various regions. I think they did a lot to be able to offer states that were interested in in getting better in, you know, uniformity between the states and understanding what should be enforced and what doesn't need to be enforced, that kind of a thing. And I think, you know, we're hearing about this right here and right now, and I think this is a, you know, benefit of that. So I don't know. There we go. So we have a calendar review and approval. That's item number 7. So if you look at the dates.
Right. Thank you very much. So at the last meeting of every year, staff presents proposed meeting dates for the following year. For 2026, we propose Thursday, January 15th, Thursday, April 16th, July 23rd, October 15th, with July 23rd as our possible in-person option. Now, the reason I say that's the possible in-person option is because the governor's expenditure freeze is still in effect. So I cannot say for sure right now whether or not we'll be able to authorize travel to an in-person meeting. But for now, that would be the pending in-person date, July 23rd. So are there any questions?
All right.
Okay, I'll turn it back over to you for a vote.
Yep. So we're looking for a motion to approve the 2026 calendar.
So moved, Commissioner Potter.
Second in, Mr. Sporn.
I think I heard Sporn. I heard two people, but I heard the name Sporn in there. So let's keep that track record going. Any discussion on the calendar? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Okay. No abstentions, and the calendar is approved. Okay. I'm going to turn it over to you, Ms. Bauer.
Okay. Next up is our annual election of officers. And again, at the final meeting of the year, the commission votes for a chair and a vice chair to serve for the following year. The effective date is at the first meeting of the next year, and there will be training provided for the chair and vice chair. These positions must be voted for individually, and they cannot be voted on together. Commissioners may either self-nominate or nominate other members of the commission, and there is no limit to the number of terms that an individual can serve as the chair or the vice chair. So I'll turn it over to you to request nominations.
All right. I'd like to open the nominations for chair.
Commissioner Sporn would like to nominate Chair Beathen to continue his good work.
Commissioner Sporn, I really do appreciate that, and I'd like to counter-nominate Commissioner Stevens, as I am looking forward to being on the commission, and I'm very grateful to get to be on the commission. It's a really good group of people, and the department's great. I would prefer to I should have done it faster. But I also wanted to just take a moment. Commissioner Stevens is going to be my nomination, if that would be all right with the rest of the committee. And anyone else can self-nominate or do whatever they'd like to do.
I move we close nominations, Commissioner Potter.
I think okay. I think that's – I don't think we need to – I guess we do have to motion to – okay. All in favor, say aye.
So what we'll need, though, is a motion to elect Commissioner Stevens as chair.
Okay.
Okay, so moved.
Second?
Second by Mr. Sporn.
Great, thanks. Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Any nays? You don't count Commissioner Stevens? And no abstentions, so the motion has been approved. I'd like to open the floor for a motion for vice chair. And
Commissioner Potter nominates Jason Sporn.
Okie doke.
Well, one thing this is Commissioner Sporn. I will say Sandy notified me. My term is expired. I need to reapply and I haven't been accepted. So I think I better step out for now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well,
they might not like me back.
We have to use Scott's new term, counter nominate.
Yeah. I'd like to, nominate, Commissioner Cedar. and he has been on the commission for, you know, quite some time. And he, I know he's not here, but I have talked to him and said, hey, look, if I nominated you, would you mind? And I know that there's also the question of, cause he's up as well. That's the motion I'm going to make.
I'll second it.
Move we close nominations.
Yeah, so we would need a motion to seeing no other current. Am I following?
So Commissioner Sporn, I'll make a motion to nominate Commissioner Cedar as vice chair.
I really appreciate that. What I'm trying to do is also I want to allow process, and I also want to make sure I'm following the rules, and also trying to get the transition figured out. And you know, but if we really want to have discussion around this, I really don't mind, because we can't have side discussions, because then we'd be violating the Open Meetings Act. And I guess what I'm going to say is there is that uncertainty about not being reappointed. No, we never know. You know, it's at the discretion of the director of the DOL, and I, you know, they make good decisions, and I really support whatever they want. And so there is that risk at the same time. And I'm just going to say that Commissioner Cedar has been on the commission for a very long time. And when I got kind of moved into the chair role, he was really involved with his politics, you know, in his city, and he had a lot of responsibilities, or at least when we did Commissioner Stevens, sorry about that. And so he's been here a while, and if he stays on, then I think he would be, you know, he's got a lot of time and experience. If for any reason he's not reappointed, then we just deal with it at another meeting. I think transparently to the group here, because it's not just my decision to make. It's not mine and Denise's decision to make. It's we are a commission, and I want to be very open about that, because if it ever feels like we're trying to, you know, push something through, that's not right either. And so I guess I'm kind of, you know, in a very public, I don't know how many people are on this call. I just want to be honor both process and transparency. That's really kind of where I'm going with that. And so I did have some thought around, you know, if Stan might be someone who would want to do it and be good at it. And frankly, I think every one of us, you know, I think you each person could offer and bring something. So a bit of a soapbox, but also, otherwise, it just looks like we just rammed something through. And that's not how I want to leave this position. So is there any discussion about, I guess, really under the topic of the vice chair? And I'm open to any feedback if anyone wants to offer that. Seeing none, I'll call for a motion, or a call for the motion to elect Commissioner Cedar as the vice chair. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We do need a second for that motion.
Oh, right, right.
I do have Commissioner Sporn as making the motion, but I don't have
second
in my notes. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. All in favor say aye. No, we're good.
Aye.
Aye.
Any nays? And no abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you very much, everyone. I really do appreciate that. All right. Back to you, Ms. Bauer.
All right. Again, at the final meeting of every year, we revisit the subcommittees, the composition, the work that they're doing, and we want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to be involved. So, we have two subcommittees at this time. The education subcommittee is up first. Currently, we only have one member of this subcommittee, and it is Denise Stevens. So we can have up to three nominees for the education subcommittee. We could also discuss the work that they're currently doing, if it's still relevant, or if we still want to keep this subcommittee.
Let's have a discussion. This is Commissioner Potter. Let's have a discussion of the work they're doing.
Yep. That'd be over to you, Commissioner Stevens.
All
Well, right now we have a guest speaker for the education committee, so we're still moving forward with keeping knowledge going for the commissioners. We also have an update on licensing that I'll talk about when it becomes the education subcommittee time to discuss that. So as far as the education committee still progressing, it still needs to stay a valid subcommittee. We haven't been meeting because there hasn't been really anything that we needed to discuss. But I can see that possibly in the future, we will set up meetings as needed basis. So I would like to keep the subcommittee going. It would be really nice if we had somebody else than on the committee, so we weren't just getting my opinion. But it would be, you know, it's nice to have a panel for discussion other than me just stating my feelings and moving forward. So I would really appreciate anybody that wants to join the committee. It's not a huge commitment, but it is an important commitment.
Yeah. There's no question, you know, especially if you want to see this continue. And there are some interesting things that are coming up. And so I'm going to open it up and see if is there anyone here in the group. And we can either do, you know, I mean, technically we need to appoint by the, you know, in a formal setting at the same time. Commissioner Bauer, let's say if somebody's thinking about it, but they're not sure at the moment, they can still attend the meeting and we would just go ahead and then get that sorted out officially in the following meeting. Am I on safe ground here in terms of, open meetings, procedural and all of that? Or do we need, if somebody's doesn't commit now, they're not allowed to come to the meeting. I'm just going to ask that question.
That's correct. We can have up to three commissioners attending the meetings. So yep. Whether or not they are actually appointed to the education subcommittee, they could attend one meeting and then we could bring this back to the floor for a vote at our January meeting, if you'd like.
Okay.
Unless so we can have no more than three commissioners.
Great. Commissioner Potter.
Yeah, is no more than three based on having a full commission or at the current standing of
Open Meetings Act.
According to the Open Public Meetings Act, vacancies do not change the number that we need for a quorum. So even if we have two vacancies, it's still the same number for a quorum. So
okay. All right.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was all my question. Thank you for answering it.
Okay. Good. Is there anyone here who's interested? I want to open that up. Commissioner Stevens, I will say this, that if we get other folks, that's great. I would like to be part of this unless you get three outside of me, you know, because I don't intend to stand down as the chair and not do anything. So I'd be happy to work with you on actually either this or presuming we continue with some middle housing thing at some point. I would be willing to be on either or none and get out of the way. So it is all good.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Sporn. I'd like to go to one of the meetings, that's for sure. If send me an invite, then I'd like to see what's going on.
Perfect.
Okay, for my notes, there will be no new members voted in for the education subcommittee. However, at our next meeting, I will invite Commissioner Beathen and Commissioner Sporn to the next meeting so that they can get a little bit more information to see if they actually want to join the subcommittee in January.
And I will say one other thing. Go ahead, Commissioner Moore.
Can you please add me to that list, Sandy, for the meeting attendance?
That would be more than three.
Oh,
I'm going to step down.
No, I'm not going to do that then. I just wanted to attend the meeting. I'm interested, like Commissioner Sporn, I share the same interest.
Okay.
I thought
so. I will change the meeting invites to include Commissioners Sporn and Morthen.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. And that I don't mind because I'm willing to help as needed, and I'm willing to also allow others to do it because don't believe me, I don't want to do everything.
And then we will we will bring this back for the January agenda to see if anybody wants to formally join the education subcommittee.
Okay, so we don't need a motion to keep this thing going, do we? Okay, good.
No.
All right. So,
okay, next up was the Middle Housing Subcommittee. The current members were Scott Beathen, Stan Sedor, Jay Sporn, and Todd Reddington as a member of the public. The time commitment was they met on an as-needed basis. For the last two commission meetings, we had discussions surrounding suspending this subcommittee until further notice, unless it was needed again. However, we had not had a formal vote to suspend this subcommittee. So at this time, if you want to have a discussion again and then take a vote to suspend the subcommittee until further notice, then this is the opportunity to do so.
Hey, Sandy, this is Commissioner Sporn. I'd just like to give a little update about what's going on in Spokane. Kathy had asked me to waltz with ACOG, look into this. And as I was doing my work for, as the head of the residential department for the Spokane County Assessor's Office, a lot of these people were very reluctant to talk to me at all about anything. They didn't want me to know anything about their business, what anything was appraised at, who appraised it, what values were, any of this stuff. And they were just basically, hey, I was too well known around here to know what I was doing for the county, and they didn't want to share any information with me. And the end of June, I retired from the county and going back into private practice, as a tax, consultant for property taxes and some private stuff. So anyway, I'm hoping that they will be a little bit more open to me now in terms of finding out what's going on. I will say, as I see these projects come around Spokane and like there was a meeting in the prior meetings that Richard Hager had talked about his Spokane office and they were doing stuff here. I'd like to say I've seen a lot of these projects go up, houses torn down. They have not sold, as far as I know at this point. I checked like about 90 days ago, they had not sold any of these. They're just sitting there and they all have for rent signs in front of them, every one of them. And it's just been, some have been on the market for more than a year and a half. And so what happens, what I've seen is the cost of these to put these up and, you know, all new units as they talk about with zero depreciation, they're priced out of the market, not to mention, you know, cosmetically, and, you know, design, street appeal and design, they don't conform with the neighborhoods very good. And so it's not been something that's been real successful in Spokane County.
Thank you.
That's really interesting. That's good feedback.
That's surprising me. I'm sure these people are a little bit upset about it to have to turn these back to rentals. And the rent signs have been up for a long time because, you know, the rents they want on these are exceed, you know, what's typical for most of the neighborhoods. You know, a lot of these, I see them as being, you know, somewhat over-improved. Or if they're not, they're just the opposite. They look too much like an apartment in an established, pretty homogenous residential, long-term historical neighborhood. And they just, you know, they just stick out and it hasn't been successful.
So I think, you know, so this is the kind of feedback that I think is good to have the commission have. And I know that one of the things that we were thinking about with the Middle Housing Subcommittee, we had a kind of a narrower band of things to consider under that particular committee. And, you know, again, going forward, everything is Commissioner Stevens. And maybe even at this point, she's the chair and I should let her take on. I don't remember we just switch over the meeting. I don't think we did last time when it transitioned from, you know, from Commissioner Potter to me. But I'll just say this, you know, I would recommend that we have, you know, a new committee. I mean, come back next year, you know, give some thought to this, but come back next year and have a committee that really is what I would call current issues, or just, I don't know what word I'm looking for, But that way, mm-hmm. we have the purview, and that committee has the ability to take on things that are of interest to the public. We're not, you know, we don't have any binding authority in this commission, but we do have, I believe, a fiduciary to think about what, you know, what topics matter for users and providers of appraisal services and the Department of Licensing. And everything needs to relate back to the Department of Licensing. And, but this is a forum we can't lobby, and we have no formal decision making power. We're not, you know, we're not rulemakers. We're not, you know, any of that. However, we're a commission of people that represent a wide landscape of the appraisal community, and it gives us an opportunity to weigh in on issues. We don't lobby. We don't make rules. But so in this committee was a great committee because it was very topical. Mm-hmm. But there's so many other things that started to kind of come into that discussion when really, you know, we got a specific topic, and it may be that the commission could be a little more, I hate to use the word nimble when it comes to anything dealing with administrative process, but a little more reactive, at least on a broader range. So that's kind of the thinking.
So perhaps we vote to just end this subcommittee, revisit it in January to see if we want to start and create a new subcommittee with different purview.
Yeah, I think that's summarized really well.
This is Commissioner Sporn. I think that's a good idea. And again, you know, like Scott's absolutely right. I mean, what we're looking at is, hey, is how does this affect somebody with a residential certification doing what could be a highest and best use of commercial property? It was all up in the air. And as far as I'm concerned, it's still a gray area. And there's some appraisers I know here, they wouldn't think twice about going and doing that. And there are others that wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And it's still in this, you know, this nebulous area here. But it is, it's, you know, what we're looking at is, Scott's right, our scope is very narrow, and it's just whether the advice we could give to, like, you know, the residential appraisers, whether you could realistically, are you, do you meet the qualifications to do this? Is it going to give you E&O issues, or is it going to come back and bite you? And that's where I can think that we can help our constituents that are the, you know, the appraisers and give them guidance. So mm-hmm. at this point, I don't know what to say to any of them.
Yep. Well, I would ask if there's any other discussion, and I'm open to more discussion. Anybody wants to weigh in on anything, but barring that, we would look for a motion to suspend the Middle Housing Subcommittee and a second. I want to pause and ask if anyone has any other comments, because I don't want to leave a discussion with someone wanted to weigh in. All right. Seeing none, I'd look for a motion and a second to suspend the Middle Housing Subcommittee.
So moved, Commissioner Potter.
Commissioner Sporn, a second.
It's moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Any nays? No abstentions, and the motion carries. Great.
Thank you. Before we move to our next agenda item, Chair Beathen, I forgot that today is 10/16. It is the Great American Shakeout. So at 10/16, we were supposed to simulate an earthquake. So at this time, I would like to ask the DOL employees to please turn off your cameras, mute yourselves for 1 minute, and simulate getting under your desk and preparing for that earthquake. So, ready, begin.
Suspend the meeting for a minute.
Thank you so much for allowing us to participate in the earthquake drill. And we would like to continue with item number 8.
Duke. So it's report outs, and we'll turn it over to Commissioner Vice Chair Stevens. Actually, Chair Stevens. You're mute, sorry.
Not yet. Chair Stevens reporting for the Education Committee. We have a guest speaker, Pete Fontana. He is the chair for the Appraisal Foundation Harmonization Task Force. And he was going to give us a short report on what they are working on.
Thank you, Ms. Stevens. Should I go?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
I was going to tell Sandy, I can't see you, so.
Yeah. Oh, no worries. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Pete Fontana. I'm the chair of the Montana Board, but I also am a member of the Appraisal Foundation's Board of Trustees. And specifically, I'm the chair of the State Harmonization Task Force. And I met with the Education Committee with Denise and Scott a month or two ago to kind of give them the highlights of what our project is and what we're doing and why we're visiting the state boards and commissions. Part of our Vision 2030 project for the foundation is to try to get states to be more congruent with the AQB criteria. So there's a number of states that have what are called overlays over the Appraisal Qualification Board minimum criteria for licensure. And what we're trying to do is have the states to examine their laws, rules, and regulations to say if, number one, do these overlays over and above the criteria, do they still make sense? And if not, we would encourage the states to get to diminish these. Also, as most of you are aware, the AQB right now is under they are conducting a full review of the criteria, and it's going to be fully rewritten. And I can tell you that I just left San Antonio yesterday from our Board of Trustees meeting, and the criteria is going to change substantially in 2026. So what we're trying to do is also prepare state boards for the fact that the criteria is going to change, which will give them a good opportunity if they have to change their rules or any statutes to examine what the new criteria is going to be and then take a look at any of these overlays that they've had on the books for a number of years. So the AQB will be putting out an exposure draft probably by the 1st of December. We encourage all the state boards to review that and weigh in on it, because the criteria is what every state agency uses to license new applicants to make sure they meet the criteria. And then if you do have an overlay, any of the state specific overlays. So before I confuse too many people, let me just explain what an overlay is. So in the worst state is Indiana, and we just visited them 3 weeks ago. Indiana has 10 additional requirements over and above the AQB criteria to become licensed. So they've never adopted the criteria from 2015, which means that a certified residential appraiser in Indiana has to have 2,500 hours of experience rather than 1,500. That candidate also has to have 24 months of training rather than 18. So that creates a significant barrier to entry, and where our profession is rapidly losing appraisers, that we're not replenishing the ranks. And we estimate that when the new UAD 3.6 comes online, which is already in the rollout phase, that we're going to lose another 15% of the total appraisers because of the technology-based interactive version of that particular report. So what we're asking the states to do is try to make sure that they don't have any overlays that are not allowing people to get into the industry when they meet the AQB criteria. So the state of Washington only has, in our review, only has really one overlay, and that is the definition of supervisor. So, and that's going to change in the new criteria. So the state of Washington requires that the supervisor that's signing the log be certified residential or commercial, or certified residential or general appraiser. So that creates a problem when people are trying to get licensed that are using ad valorem tax experience. So the state of Washington accepts ad valorem tax experience. The AQB also allows 100% ad valorem tax experience to count toward licensure. The issue is that if the supervisor in that county that is supervising those assessment offices isn't certified residential or certified general, then those employees that are working under them, their experience doesn't count. While in another county in Washington where that supervisor is a certified residential or general appraiser, all of that individual's experience counts. So that creates a little bit of an issue. And so that would require a statute change to the definition of supervisor. And we just like, you know, to everybody to understand that most of these ad valorem tax supervisors or county assessors or county property appraisers, whatever the jurisdiction in what state they're referred to as, most of these belong to the International Association of Assessing Officers, which is the agency that oversees the educational requirements. They provide certifications. Similar to the Appraisal Institute's SRA and MAI in a form of a certified assessment examiner. In fact, we just discussed this yesterday at our partners meeting in San Antonio, where the Appraisal Institute will recognize those certifications from the IAAO as a certified assessment examiner. You can translate most of that experience and education over to your SRA or MAI. So the fact that these folks aren't recognized as providing supervisory authority over their trainees or employees when they apply is a little bit troubling, because those folks have as much experience as a supervisor as a certified residential or certified general appraiser. So the ask for Washington would be is that we could look at the statute and change the statute to be more malleable to the AQB criteria. Now, that being said, I think that it would be wise. Does your legislature meet in 2025? Yes, it's biannual?
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you. So it'd be helpful for you guys to see the first draft of the AQB's exposure draft, which is it's going to be published for everybody to comment on right around December 1st is what the chair told me yesterday. And so that way you can see what the new definition of supervisor is for them. Now, I will tell you that the foundation has some responsibility in this too, because I think that the criteria was written too strictly and states adhere to it in the strictest of definition. If you read the criteria, the definition of supervisor is almost exactly what the state law is in Washington. So we have a little bit of responsibility in this too, because I don't think we wrote the definitions correctly to allow for other supervisors to attest to a trainee's or an employee's work product. So in any case, that's what the State Harmonization Task Force has been doing. There's some states with some really challenging overlays, and Washington's not one of them. There are only 10 states that allow that actually accept by reference the AQB criteria, which we would encourage every state to do, because that way when the criteria changes, you don't have to do anything. The state just accepts the AQB criteria in whole. And so there's 10 states that do that by reference. And that cuts down on a lot of administrative headache for you, because you don't have to continue to change your laws, rules, and regulations every time USPAP changes, every time the criteria changes. You just accept the criteria as written. So in closing, I will say that I just want to tell you, like, that some of these other kind of goofy overlays that we've run into. We went to the state of Alabama, and the state of Alabama didn't allow experience on your experience log if the property you were appraising was more than 50 miles away from your physical office address. And so if in a technological based environment that we're in now, where you can really make yourself proficient in an area. And that particular rule was put in 30 years ago, where MLSs are online. You can use GIS systems to research markets. That particular rule didn't make much sense. They also had a rule that said you got zero experience on your log if you didn't make an interior inspection of the property. So if you did exterior appraisal, or you did a hybrid appraisal where somebody else did the data collection and you did the analysis and conclusions of value, you didn't get any experience credit for that as well. And they have now since removed those requirements, and Alabama is now the 10th state that accepts the criteria in whole. So with that, I will close, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. And I'm hoping that after the criteria, the new criteria exposure draft comes out, that we can revisit this with the you folks on the commission, and then possibly look at amending the statute to be more open-ended when it comes to supervisors and who's and what experience counts. So with that, I would open it up for any questions that you might have. Happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, Commissioner Potter, when you talk about an ad valorem supervisor, I like that idea, but are you paying attention to whether or not the specific jurisdiction, county in this case in Washington, that their appraisal product, their ad valorem appraisal product, is USPAP compliant? If it is not, would the supervisor sign off, and it would, even though their appraisal product was not USPAP compliant? I mean, USPAP has an ad valorem part to it, so.
Correct. But thank you for that, Commissioner Potter, and that's an excellent question. And that's a question that we have. So on the subcommittee, or on our task force, it was important when I formed the task force that we specifically had one of our task force members be one of the program managers from the appraisal subcommittee, because a lot of these questions were, is the subcommittee going to approve this? Well, anything I tell you today has been approved by the subcommittee because they're actually a member of our task force. And so to answer your question specifically, yes, USPAP standard 5 and 6 in USPAP is specific to mass appraisal. Currently, the criteria, the AQB criteria, says that mass appraisal experience will count at 100% as long as it's standard 5 and 6 compliant. I think that's going to be changing, because I think that the AQB is going to remove any reference to any experience being USPAP compliant, because there's a lot of experience out there that's not USPAP compliant that might be in congruence with USPAP, like Yellow Book appraisals, or international valuation standards, are folks in Canada and stuff that are using IVSC standards. So they're not using USPAP, but their experience is such that it's compliant. So with respect to those folks that are in, an appraisal assessment office, and there's no reference that their work is compliant with USPAP, we've done two things. One, we've developed a review form for states to use, that you can go through the submission of the work product from that appraiser and match it to standard 5 and 6 criteria. We will provide, I think, Denise, did I provide that to you guys, that leave behind document the first time? Because if I didn't, I will send it to you so you can distribute it to the board members. Secondly, the appraisal subcommittee recognizes Montana, Utah, and Colorado as for using an alternative approach. So what we do in Montana is that we ask for them to provide 3 standard 1 and 2 reports. Our feeling was, is you're asking us to license you to do standard 1 and 2 appraisal work. So why don't you demonstrate to us that you're proficient at that, that what you've done through your education and your experience in that assessment office translates into your ability to write a standard 1 and 2 compliant report. So then we send that report through the normal review process. And if it comes back clean, we don't really care where their experience came from, or if it was standard 5 and 6 compliant, because they demonstrated the minimum proficiency to practice in the standard 1 and 2 fee appraisal arena. Now the ASC signs off on that. They say that's a perfectly acceptable practice because you're reviewing the work that you're licensing them for, but you're approving the experience for the amount of hours that they've gained in an appraisal practice. So Commissioner Potter, does that answer your question a little?
Yes.
Thank you. Is there any other questions specific to that? I mean, honestly, most states don't know how to review the mass appraisal log. So that's why we developed the mass appraisal review form that you can systematically go through standards 5 and 6 and match up the experience and what they did. And also we put sample logs together for states to use as well. I know people in Washington have been licensed under this statute in mass appraisal. So I know you guys are at least familiar with it, because I know a couple of appraisers that have been licensed in Washington through the process and got their experience through mass appraisal. Scott, did you have a question?
Mr. Sporn, please go first, and then I'll go after you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Scott. Hey, Pete, I just had a couple of questions. I was a certified residential appraiser and a supervisor for a county assessor's office in Spokane. And recently, before I retired, it was been about 6 months ago or something, I got a contact from the Department of Licensing that was looking to approve some educational hours through the mass appraisal process for a different county. I don't know which county it was. And there was evidently a bunch of turnover at the DOL, and they just dumped all this on this person's desk and said, here, you figure it out. So she contacted me, goes, hey, what am I looking for to make this really compliant? Is this applicable education? And come to find out, going to, you know, some other meetings and stuff throughout different assessor's office in the county or in the state, you know, there's a lot of different ways that these counties do business. There's a lot of counties that for what they call, you know, appraisers are basically their property inspectors. I mean, they go out and look at the properties, and somebody else does all the modeling, does all the, you know, figure out, you know, what they need to do to the market and defense those conclusions for appeals. Spokane County is one where our appraisers did everything. They were responsible for their neighborhoods. They did it from the inspection part all the way through the appeal process and even to the state level of appeals. And so there are some, you know, there's some questions there. There's such a lack of standardization between counties. That's got to be kind of difficult, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly why. So I came through the assessment ranks as well. I was the county assessor. I was the elected county assessor. Didn't know what I wanted to do when I graduated from college. So I ended up running for county assessor and had no idea what I was doing when I first got there. But here I am now. So I was self-taught. So I spent 13 years as the county assessor in one of the largest counties in Montana. And I understand the difficulties that in Montana, the Department of Revenue runs the entire tax jurisdiction across all 56 counties. So everything's fairly consistent in what these appraisers are doing. And they do the same thing that you're talking about in Spokane County, is that they did everything. And so in these counties where you don't know if they're doing everything, that would require them to gain this experience, that's why we opted to have them submit 3 standard 1 and 2 appraisal reports on a URAR or a narrative form or however they want to do it. That way, you at the agency can just have that reviewed in your normal course of business. And if it comes back nice and clean, all you're trying to verify is that they have 1,000, 1,500, or 2,500 hours experience that is appraisal related. So somebody working in an assessment office for 10 years where there's 2,080 work hours in a year that has 20,000 hours experience, I'm pretty confident that 1,000 hours of that would be acceptable for appraisal experience. That's why we asked to have that standard 1 and 2 report, so we can review their ability to comprehend and demonstrate proficiency.
Yeah, and that was kind of one of the questions and one of the suggestions that I made to her at the DOL, is that there was, you know, if you're going, you know, this is a person that really, I don't think they'd ever really even seen a URAR form and had no review experience, and said, well, they need to get some appeal experience where they're, you know, they're going up against an appellant that's had an appraisal done. You look at this, you compare it, you compare your work, and then they included that in that requirement. And I think that person did get a credit for those hours once they submitted the appeal packages, 3 samples of those as a fact.
Yep. And that's acceptable as well. It just, to me, that, you know, requiring them to submit 3 reports, standard 1 and 2 reports, cleans that up a lot because it doesn't, it's less of an administrative headache for you because you just have those reports reviewed and then the board makes a decision. It's like, well, this report came back super great. And so then you can generally assume that the education that they received and the experience that got them to writing that report. Now, remember, they also have to pass the rigorous national certification exam that only has a 62% pass ratio for certified residential. And that's with you getting drugged around by your traditional supervisor, which to me is pretty abysmal. Perea, the practical application of real estate appraisal, has had 50 graduates, and all 50 graduates have passed the exam on their first try. So, you know, to say that the old supervisor model or that somebody in an appraisal assessment office isn't getting better experience, the exam would demonstrate that, boy, we have a lack of supervisory experience or teaching these folks how to be an appraiser when they can only pass the test at a 62% pass-fail ratio on the first time. So in Colorado, they had 16 assessment personnel apply. All 16 of those people in the last 2 years passed the test on their first try.
That's a great point. That's a great fail.
And that's what we're trying to do is we're trying to measure that with some metrics. We're not trying to just say, just take everything. We're trying to put some metrics against it as well. So you can see, and I can't get your first time test taker pass fail ratio scores, even though it's an AQB requirement, but you guys can. And I would encourage you to do that. Do you guys use PSI? Who's your test provider? PSI?
Yes, PSI.
Okay. You can just ask them as the state of Washington, as the administrator, what's the first time test taker pass fail ratio? So you know if you're at or above. And that's what I encourage these states to do that have all these overlays, like Indiana that has 10 overlays. They were below the national average. I said, so you're making these people do all this extra work and they're not passing the test at any better. So, I mean, you're restricting and they don't have the license category. So 9 states don't have the licensed category, which makes it even more difficult to get in the business. So that's what our subcommittee, that's what our task force is doing, is trying to point these things out. And I would point out not having the license category like Indiana, Pennsylvania, and Florida. If you get transferred to one of those states and you're a licensed appraiser in Washington, you do not get a license. You are out of business because they don't recognize the license category in those states. And we're trying to get them to change that because that's not a very good way of having a professional, having a profession when you can't cross state lines and continue to practice. So that's the whole goal of our harmonization task force, is to get states to, you know, be more in line with the AQB criteria. And I will point out, and I told Scott and Denise this in our meeting, we are here to help. We are not a one and done. And that's why I'm here today. And I will continue to meet with you folks if you have an interest in freshening up the statute with respect to supervisor, or adding some rules that say you have to turn in standard 1 and 2 report. The foundation is here to help. We're not going to go away. We're not just dropping this in your lap. We're here to help you write the legislation you need it, help you write the rule if you need it. And so the foundation is committed to this project. Scott,
that's
you
great.
Had a question?
Thanks, Pete. That's a great presentation.
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner.
Commissioner Stevens, may I go?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Scott, go ahead.
No worries. I was just waiting. So I really appreciate, because we all recognize barriers to entry are very important. You know, getting appraisers into their field. And I know that, you know, I've also, you know, at the conference yesterday, I heard a lot of concerns around the UAD form, what that's going to do to residential appraisers. I'm not a residential appraiser. So I learned this stuff from the commission and from other stuff. And I think that when the proposed AQB rules come out, I mean, I mentioned that the Industry Advisory Council, so I've been involved with the foundation. They really do take feedback seriously.
And
I think the work of this committee, I think, you know, kind of now reacquainting what the topic is and hearing the presentation, we can really make a difference. But I do have a question, and I've got two questions actually. The first one's simplistic. Because the state supervisory model is, and I'm a supervisor, but I can have no more than 3 trainees. Now, the first question is if the department, I mean, if you had a staff of 15 folks that wanted to get their license through the auspices of, you know, assessing mass appraisal, does that ratio still apply?
What ratio are we talking about, Scott?
I can have no more than three trainees. I can only sign off on the reports for their time for three folks.
That's one of the things that the AQB is looking at, is that with the new practicum courses that are popping up around the country, you know, is this requirement that you can only have three trainees at once applicable? So Perea, you don't necessarily have a supervisor, you have a mentor, and there's a mentor for every, you know, 10 or 12 applicants, 10 or 12 entrants. So that is one of the things that I think the AQB is going to be looking at and changing as well, is the number of trainees you can have. I think that they set that, a lot of states set that back when they thought that there was these appraiser mills before 2008, where they were just getting people licensed and cranking out appraisers, appraisals. But I think that with the new lending requirements and Dodd-Frank, and I think that that's pretty much tightened up. And so I think that they're going to lift that restriction, Scott, on the number of trainees you can have.
When I think about what protects the public trust, the thing that comes to my mind is on, at least on the commercial side, I can't speak for residential, on the commercial side, it takes a lot of work to get someone trained so they're actually able to be competent to get a general certification in order to do any and all property types. And frankly, as a supervisor, I'm terrified. You know, what I don't want to have is have a trainee under my license, make a mistake. You know, and mistakes happen, but I mean, and if I had 15 or 20 and I was the sole individual doing that, that would be a concern. Now, I'm not saying that this is bad legislation, but it really does raise a question to me of competency and best practices to protect both the supervisor and the users of appraisal services.
And you know, Scott, it's interesting you mentioned the IAC, because one of the big discussions we had with the IAC, and I sat on their task force committee to write a comment letter to the AQB on their concept paper back in May. That was the big discussion, especially from our folks at CBRE, some of our folks at Citibank, where they have large commercial appraisal presence, was this very question topic you have. And we understand that. But largely 80 to 90% of all the people coming into the industry as a first time applicant are licensed or certified residential. Most people aren't coming in as that certified general appraiser without some kind of experience. And so we worked on a concept plan through IAC forward to the AQB to say that you would have to have so much experience as a certified residential if you're trying to move up. And I can provide that paper to you because it's a public document now.
Why don't we just send that information? Because what I don't want to do is
absolutely.
A deep
because
debate
I understand
on this,
what you're saying.
Let me just finish. This is going to go to the education subcommittee and they'll vet everything, but I want to get that one out there. And the other one I'm going to put out, because I do also want to make sure that we leave room for the next report and public comment. So I'm going to put it out there and really go to the education subcommittee, make sure that the question comes in a public forum. Is I understand, and support other disciplines becoming state certified, you know, being able to use that to get the license. But the other question, or the other thing I just want to raise is, by what standards are other professional, if it's just some county policy, that's great. But by what standards would those folks not doing a, you know, in the range that we're in mostly now, so for in the mass appraisal, which is also part of USPAP, but is it, because I heard you say they don't need to be USPAP compliant. There's other IVS IVS
yellow book appraisals.
Yeah, yellow. Thank you. And so then, but is there a standard that they're held to? Because otherwise, there are no guidelines.
Yeah, and that's what the AQB is really wrestling with right now. And that's why we're trying to, you know, kind of prime these boards that we're talking to. And we're doing direct engagement. Like I said, we're going to every, I'd be at your board meeting in person if you had it, because we're doing direct engagement with all the state boards to let them know that that criteria change is going to be substantial. And so when that comes out, that exposure draft, we want you to, all those things you're commenting on, Scott, we want you to comment on those. As you know, okay, being a member of the foundation before, we take every one of those comment letters seriously.
Good. Yeah, I know that. So, okay, I'm good for now for questions. Okay. And I'm not trying to cut it off either. I just want to make sure that I get the questions out there.
Yeah, just before I end this, I just want to tell you how, like, what we consider a dire crisis coming ahead of this industry at the the residential level, the mortgage appraiser level. CoreLogic, or Cotality now, that owns Alamode Software. Alamode is the largest appraisal software vendor in the residential space. They have 40,000 subscribers. They've had a mobile app out for over 10 years that you can mobile sketch, take digital photos, upload it into your into the cloud, download it into your report. They've had that out for 10 years. Only 22% of their 40,000 people actually use the mobile app. And UAD 3.6 is going to require all data be collected on a tablet or some other kind of device. And so talk about a monumental shift for people that are using pad and paper still, that are using regular non-digital measuring devices, haven't used any of the measurement devices, the digital LiDAR measuring devices. That's why we are predicting that 15% of these people are just going to say, I'm done and retire. Because remember, the average age of the appraiser in America is 58 years old. So that's the crisis we see coming. And that's why we're trying to tell the states, like, you know, this shift in the reporting requirements for mortgage work, and the fact that only 22% of 40,000 appraisers are using digital technology today. That's the crisis we see coming to the appraisal industry. And we're trying to save it, meaning we're trying to, there's no sense in having overlays if we can overcome some of the objections to let people into the industry that actually qualify. We're not trying to lower the standards, not by any means. We're just trying to ask you to take a look at any of the standards that are over and above the criteria. So that's all I have for you folks. And I'm very pleased to be here today.
Thank you, Pete. I really appreciate you speaking to us today. I know this is a new topic for some of them, some of the commissioners, because they haven't been on the education committee. And I think what you're doing is fabulous, and I know how hard you're working on this. I appreciate you coming today and speaking to us. Thank you.
You betcha. Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
Hey, Pete, will you follow through with some of the paperwork that you said you would send to us?
Yeah, and I know I have you and Scott's email address, so I'll send it to you and Scott, and then you can distribute it to the agency, and they can get it to the board.
Perfect. Thank you.
I will do that immediately.
All right. Awesome. Thanks. Another topic we have underneath the Education Committee, I just wanted to make sure the commissioners were aware of the Department of Licensing implementing House Bill 1797. It's regarding the valuation bias and fair housing course requirements. As of January 1st of 2026, you will be required, this is new and licensed appraisers, everybody, a 7-hour course plus a 1-hour exam before you can renew your license starting January 1st, 2026. After that, you will have to take a 4-hour refresher every 2 years, just like USPAP. I didn't know if you guys were aware of that, but that is out there starting January 1st. Does anybody have any questions regarding that? All right. That's my report for the Education Committee.
Chair Beetham, you're muted.
I get that notification, and then you tell me. I get it. I'm sorry. Thanks. You're doing great work, and I'm really, really grateful about that. And Pete, if you're still listening, I want to say thank you as well. A lot of information, and it's necessary, and it's going to be very helpful. So thank you.
You bet.
We're going to move in. Yep, legislative update report, and turn it over to, it is Austin, yep. Right?
Yes.
We have management analyst Austin Kohler, who is going to do a brief legislative update.
Thank you, Sandy, Chair Beathen. Commissioners, good morning. I have a brief legislative update for you all. It's regarding House Bill 1797, which Commissioner Stevens gave a great summary on, so I don't have to go over that again, but we are wrapping up the rulemaking for that. It will be going out next week to solidify all those requirements in our administrative code, and that will all be ready to go into effect before the January 1st date when it'll go into effect. And that's all I had for that. So, yeah, if anybody has any questions, that's all I have.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sandy.
Now, moving on, I have the next agenda item as well. It is the review of the master action item list. We still have a current recruitment open. It is in progress, and I'm hoping to have those discussions by the first of next month. So hopefully by our January meeting, we will have some new commissioners to announce. Also, on the master action item list was a legislative update, which is now complete. Thank you, management analyst Kohler. I appreciate your update. And that concludes our master action item list.
Great. All right. So thanks very much. There's been a lot to cover in this meeting, and I know it's a lot of information. And sometimes we've had these meetings, they run really fast, and this one is a little bit full of agenda items, and that's good. The let's see, verbal comments. So first of all, do we have any written comments that were sent in?
We do not.
Okay, thanks. So a reminder, the public can address the commission on any matters within our jurisdiction verbally during the meeting, or you can submit written comments before or after. We do ask that you stay at a 3-minute limit, and you know, in days past, we have been somewhat flexible, but in order to make sure that we're publicly complying with the Open Meetings Act, we just really need to keep it at 3 minutes. So, we will stop you if you go over. And, and a reminder to the commissioners that we won't engage in any, discussion or back and forth dialogue. And, that will, But if there's an action item that comes out of that, then we can take that. And then just a reminder, be polite. Dave Towne.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you can hear my audio okay today. I'm leaving my camera turned off. I just wanted to ask the DOL staff if you could please send out a reminder message at least one day before these meetings. Every quarter. I know you sent out a message a while back, about 2 or 3 weeks ago or something, but I was unable to find that message so I could click on the link to open this meeting today. Finally figured out I could get on the website, and I found your meeting location information there and was able to get in. So if the staff would please just keep into consideration that appraisers are busy, and reminders a day or so would be helpful for these meetings. So that's all I have today, and thank you very much. But I did want to add Peter Fontana's comments this morning. Very, very enlightening for those of us in the industry wondering what's going to happen going forward here. So, again, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for your comment.
Any other comments from the in the room?
Chair Beathen, this is Scott DiBiasio, if I may.
Please.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Beathen, members of the commission. For the record, Scott DiBiasio with the Appraisal Institute. I just wanted to clarify in relation to the implementation of House Bill 1797, particularly the education requirements related to fair housing evaluation bias. While that bill is not specific to the number of hours that is required, Of course, we have the new AQB requirements that go into effect on January 1st of 2026. The clarification that I wanted to make is that for already licensed appraisers, they are required to take the 7-hour class, but they are not required to take the 1-hour exam. The 1-hour exam is required for new applicants or for appraisers that are looking to upgrade their credential. But already licensed appraisers only have to take the 7-hour class. They're not required to take the exam. Where an exam may be required, or at least some demonstration of knowledge may be required, is if somebody takes the valuation bias of fair housing class online. And of course, if they take it online for continuing education, then of course, an exam is required for asynchronous online education. But if an already licensed appraiser is taking that in the classroom, they are not required by the AQB criteria to take an exam. Now, I have not had an opportunity to take a look at the Washington proposed rules as it relates to this. And if you want to require the 1-hour exam, you know, that's okay. But that is not required by the AQB. So just wanted to make that clarification. And happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you. I think that yeah, we won't engage in back and forth, but I really do appreciate your comments. And, you know, I don't know how you go to every one of the state meetings, because, you know, these can be really interesting or sometimes real snoozers, and you guys monitor all the states. So, okay.
Well, it's funny you say that. I'm actually standing in the airport in San Antonio on my way back from the same meeting that Peter was at. So I get to as many of them as I can.
Good. Well, thank you. Sorry about that back and forth. I hopefully didn't do anything wrong, but any other public comments? Okay. Seeing none, we will close the public comment period. And Sandy, if we have anything that we want to now bring to you after the comments, is when do we do that? Or do we do that?
That will be at item 10.2, the request for future agenda items.
Thanks. Sorry about that. Yeah. Yep. It's right there. Okay. Any announcements?
The staff does not have any announcements at this time.
Okay. Future agenda items. 10.2, I guess a reminder email to go out. Is that something that, you know, yeah, great. So it's not hard to do. Okay. If you want to go ahead and review the action items.
Yes. So the action items that I captured were, number one, I am going to invite Commissioners Sporn and Moore to the next education subcommittee meeting. I will add an agenda item for the January meeting to discuss subcommittees. And I will send out reminder messages a little bit closer to the meeting dates. Did I capture everything?
Anyone? Sounds good.
Okay.
Before we move to the next item, which is adjournment, I just want to take a brief moment and hopefully you'll indulge me. Commissioner Stevens, thank you for everything you've done this last year. I am really, really grateful for all the hard work. And, you know, I'm looking forward to working under you. And I'll say the same to Commissioner Cedar. I also want to say, Sandy, you are an amazing support for our boards, our commission. And I want to thank you for that. And Bill Dutra, and also just the director and the whole DOL staff. I mean, there's some tension at times, and I just want to say thank you very much for everything that you've done, for all of you and to the staff and to this public. And it's been a real honor to get to work here and not work here, but do this job. I'm really glad to turn it over. But, you know, we've gone through a tricky couple of years. And so I just want to say thank you to everyone. So, I guess Commissioner
Potter. Wasn't a motion, but I'll second that.
Commissioner Potter, you got your hand up.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to thank you, Scott. You've been a great chair for the Appraiser Commission. You put a lot of time in this. I know how much time it takes to be chair, and you are a great chair. So I appreciate you so much and keeping our trajectory in the right direction. So the very best to you. I know you're going to still be around and everything, but I appreciate all the work you did as chair.
Well, I had a great mentor in following you, Dean, so thanks very much. All right, so we don't need a motion to adjourn, and with that, I will say the meeting is adjourned.
And our next meeting will be January 15th, 2026.
Thanks. I missed
thanks,
that
Andy.
One. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a fantastic rest of your day.
You all as well.
Go Mariners.